All right, Nick Nurse coming up. He'll join us in about 5 minutes. The Raptors are in Detroit tomorrow night. They're starting a road trip. They're in Detroit tomorrow, Milwaukee Saturday. Feels like they play in Milwaukee 7 times a year.
Like, it's crazy.
I don't know what it is, but it's like they're always in Milwaukee. And they'll take them on this weekend. And then on Monday, they head down to Miami and take on Kyle Lowry and the Miami Heat.
They're so, back in Milwaukee this weekend?
I believe they're in Milwaukee.
Second time in 10 days. They were there on, I think, January 5th. And they've only got 2 road games there, but when you stack them up like that, it gets a little monotonous.
Well, remember last year they played in Milwaukee back-to-back in Milwaukee.
That's right.
They played like Tuesday, Thursday in
that
Milwaukee.
That was the worst when the NHL did that. They got rid of like the Western, Eastern type stuff, or they only did like one. You played one division a year. So ultimately you ended up going to Boston and playing back-to-back, and it was like, this doesn't seem right, man. Like in one city back-to-backs, it just doesn't jive.
Yeah, unless it's the playoffs. Like, what are you doing in the regular season? So, and Kyle, again, the Miami Heat have been doing what we would expect them to do. They're a team to be reckoned with. I could see them in an NBA final. I could. I think it's Milwaukee and Brooklyn are probably the two front runners in the East and probably should be, assuming health. And if Brooklyn decides to pay the fine for Kyrie Irving, you notice that just came out yesterday? Where did that news come from? Why is that all of a sudden just being revealed that you could pay a minor fine and have Kyrie play for you?
No kidding.
When you're in
what
Brooklyn.
A little detail that's been left out for a long time.
That
talent like that, it's not even a factor. You pay it every game.
What's the issue,
Dave? That was well known to the Brooklyn Nets, guys. It was a good story by Stephen Bondi of the New York Daily News, no doubt about it, and it caused a lot of conversation, but there's been a lot of conversation about this in the league office, obviously. And the rule is you're not allowed to break local rules. You're not allowed to break local rules and pay the fine. It's you're just not allowed to break local rules. It's about the optics, right? You can't be seen as skirting the rules that everybody else is paying attention to because you got more money. That wouldn't go over with the league.
So you're saying the league is the one not allowing it. It's not that the Brooklyn Nets wouldn't want to. It's that
I'm not aware of their thinking on this. It's just the league would definitely not want them to do that for optics purposes. They want to obey the laws of the jurisdictions in which they play their games.
Right, which is understandable, but it is a significant amount of news. Like, I was always of the impression, like, it's just not allowed. Like, you cannot do it, where technically you are breaking the rule, but it's like parking when you're not supposed to park somewhere. You pay a ticket, you move on. It's not a... not something you're going to get handcuffed for and thrown in jail and face a judge.
Well, no, but it's a slightly more hot-button issue than parking, right?
Obviously.
Look at the backlash in Australia with Novak Djokovic trying to play in the Australian Open without being vaccinated. It's not just about him coming in and putting the wrong line on his visa form. This is about something bigger. This is about people who've been following the rules, not appreciating people who have not been doing what the rest of society or the majority of society has done.
Yeah, well, I mean, getting vaccinated is—it's not a rule. It's not a law to do that. But yes, I understand what you're saying.
It is if you want to play on the court in Brooklyn.
Yeah, or pay a fine. Yes, you're right. Like technically, again, there's variations of rules here. I understand what you're saying, and I get the optics, and I know why Brooklyn wouldn't be willing to do it. I'm just curious how this just got out. Like, is it Kyrie that floated this out? Like, hey, just so you know, man, like I could be playing. Someone did the math. It would cost him like $80,000 for the whole year for him to play.
Right, but it's not about the money, guys.
Of course it's not.
It's not about the money.
Yeah,
it's about the NBA not wanting to flaunt the rules because it doesn't look good.
Right now they don't want to. It's a business, and in a month, if the wind keeps turning the way it's turning, and I get the impression like it is, like I don't think you can compare the States to Australia. I'm not sure you can compare anywhere in the world to Australia in the way that they've been reacting to COVID. I'm curious to see where we're at in a month or two. You know, if it's different. They got a new mayor in New York who's, I get the impression, taking a very different approach.
Yeah.
Because you're right. I mean, optics is always a part of it, and protecting the shield is always a part of it. Like, that's the primary role of the commissioner, is to protect the brand and to grow the brand. But, you know, if in a month it's like, I don't know. The polling suggests that people would be cool with this. I'd be curious if all of a sudden they started paying the fine. In a month or two, I wouldn't put it past them.
No, I think that's a factor. I mean, I just think, look, it's public opinion is a huge factor, and you have to understand here. Like, these teams are in constant contact. Like the Raptors and the Maple Leafs, and I'm sure the Brooklyn Nets are the same. They're in constant contact and lobbying politicians to get the restrictions lightened, to allow them to have, you know, easier access to their facilities and to allow teams to come over the border easier in this, in the case of the Raptors. Yeah, you're right. There's constant lobbying. Things are always changing. There's no, I don't think what's true today is going to be true tomorrow. That's you can't assume that, and I wouldn't.
No, no, I think that's safe to say. But tomorrow night, the Raptors, again, will be in Detroit, taking on the Pistons. And Detroit's always causing them problems recently. Dwayne Casey and those Pistons, man, they don't cause anyone else problems. They seem to cause the Raptors problems.
That's a good point, Brian.
Yeah, thank you, Dwayne. That is a good point. It's a fact. I mean,
but
somehow
you just see them night after night get absolutely dummied, and then the Raptors show up. It's kind of like a couple, like years ago, they were Tampa Bay Devil Rays or whatever they were. Mm-hmm. They were terrible down there, but they would crush the Jays all the time. Then they built their program up, and they're a legit contender every year. But back in the day, they were garbage, and then the Jays would wheel down there and get crushed.
Yeah. It's true. They were. They were a 45-win team, and 15 of them felt like they were against the Jays.
Oh, my God. Every game.
Yeah. It didn't make much sense. But maybe the Raptors will figure it out tomorrow night. You know, Scotty Barnes was practicing today, so we'll see if he's available tomorrow night. Gary Trent Jr. was not available at practice, but is on the road. And this is a big road trip, again, in Detroit tomorrow. Milwaukee on Saturday, down in Miami, taking on Kyle and the Heat on Monday, and they remain on the road. They're going to be in Dallas. They're rolling through Washington. Here's the head coach of the Raptors, Nick Nurse. How you doing, Nick?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing well. Is the Raptor traveling with you? That's what people want to know. Are you bringing him on the road or what?
I didn't see him on the plane, but
okay.
I don't think so.
All right. We're just wondering because a couple of nights ago that was a scene, and it's. I want to ask you about that, like coaching in an empty stadium, like one that you're familiar with. I mean, you coached NBA final games in there where the roof felt like it was going to pop off a tip-off, let alone the end of the game. What's that experience been like for you guys in your club? Because you're the only ones in the league that has to deal with it right now.
Yeah. Well, it's been a little up and down, kind of like everything. I think happy to be playing. I think it was okay. And then there was a couple games where we didn't play with great energy, and it was pretty quiet in there, and neither team played with great energy, so I think that had a little bit to do with it. But what do you do, man? You just got to keep trying to fight your way through it, right?
Is that what you can say to the players, Nick? Like, I know the players sometimes in 2022, they're a little bit more high maintenance than they were 30 years ago. Is it just, guys, don't worry about what's going on in the crowd. Go out there and play? Because I'm sure the guys aren't happy about it. You're watching highlights of other games, and it's packed. Life's great. Life's normal. Yeah. And then you got to play a home game, and it's nonsense. What do you say to the guys? Or is it just,
you know,
it is what it is?
I haven't addressed it. Yeah, I have not addressed it one time. I think that they've done a good job a couple of games there. I've used this at the press conference before, is they've kind of created a lot of their own fun over there on the bench a couple times. And maybe they were doing that knowing they needed to. I did hear a couple of them say when we went to Milwaukee last week, they were really excited to go play in front of fans again, you know, to go on the road. So, yeah, I give them credit, man. They've done a good job. They've tried to, you know, I've just tried to focus on basketball, hoping that they would, and I think they have done a good job.
Well, one of your guys, Nick, that has provided energy when he's been at his best has been Chris Boucher, and I got a kick out of him telling reporters that he used to watch video of Kevin Durant, but lately he's been watching video of Dennis Rodman to sort of pattern his game after. Now, you coach Dennis Rodman. Let me ask you, do you see some resemblance there, and did you have anything to do with the Rodman video getting in front of Mr. Boucher?
That's good. We're talking a lot about Rodman the last couple days, which is good. I think that I love it, man. I mean, listen, is Chris's energy and knack for doing that and just getting on the glass and kind of being a pain in the butt out there is awesome. And it's been really high level, especially last game, last few games. I love it. I didn't know he was watching Rodman film, and I guess Justin Champagny's been watching it as well. So those two guys are learning from one of the best, and they're a handful, the pair of them, when they're out there going to the offensive glass, pretty relentless and creative, and it's been fun. It's been fun to watch them.
With Nick Nurse, well, we've discussed your bigs in the rotation you've been using a fair amount on this show, because you don't have a conventional big. Now, Dennis Rodman was not a conventional big. He wasn't 7 feet, 280. And you don't have that big man in the paint that's just going to set up shop and hammer the boards and own the paint. And, you know, between Boucher and Precious and Ken Birch, you're finding minutes. You're going to the bench quickly at times to get a big in there. Is this going to be a juggling act all season? How have you come to this conclusion in terms of how you're deciding to use the bigs on your team?
Yeah, this is kind of, you know, there's no real big, but we're big kind of all over, right? So we're bigger at the wings, the two, the three, the four. We're just kind of, you know, pretty big throughout the lineup. And that's what we kind of were hoping to do with this team this year. We were hoping to get a lot of length and athleticism out there, and we haven't got to it that much just because of all the couple guys in, couple guys out, injuries here and there. It seems like, you know, pretty much repeatedly, and then obviously some COVID battles there. But you know, we finally got the team back for a couple games, and was our chance to kind of go out there, you know, come out of the second quarter with five guys 6'8" or bigger, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. It's a cool lineup, Nick. And you know, one of the things that people have noted about that lineup is it doesn't include a guard. And the guard play you've had in the starting lineup has been outstanding, with Fred VanVleet, reigning player of the week in the Eastern Conference. But the backups have had a tough time at the point guard. I mean, how much does that concern you? And what do you make of the up and down seasons that Malachi Flynn and Delano Banton have had for you?
Yeah, you know, it's probably part of the reason that we, you know, shifted to what we've done lately. Again, I think we've given Delano and Malachi, you know, some ample looks, and we've gotten forced into doing it too sometimes, where they've got to play the whole game, you know, all kinds of things like that. And, you know, I'm not as surprised probably by Delano being up and down. I think that's kind of what rookies do. You know, they're going to have some flashes of brilliance. They're going to have some moments where it's really hard on them out there. I think just getting used to, you know, the number of games. I mean, Delano and Scotty have already played a college season. You know, they're already going past anything they've ever seen before. We're not even to the halfway point yet, right? So
right.
They'll adjust. I think you know, just depending on, again, what happens, you know, one or both of them will probably get thrown back in the rotation. I think again, like, you know, we come out there with Pascal and Scotty kind of to start the second unit, to start the second quarter. And both of those guys can kind of share the point guard. And then Scotty goes out here for a little bit. And now I'm sitting here thinking, well, if they take away Pascal, or they put too much heat on him bringing the ball up the floor or something, what are we going to do? Well, We may have to go back to one of those two guys, and it'll probably be just based on matchups out there and what it feels like, and maybe a little bit just a gut feel too.
Well, when that's the case, I guess Fred VanVleet is getting his limited time on the bench as a breather. I mean, Fred's stats have been off the charts. He played 44 minutes a couple of nights ago, and he said recently, like, he's seeing different defenses. There's a box and one being thrown at him, and I wonder if you feel any sort of responsibility for that, the box and one.
I do, and I had no idea what to do against it either. But, no, he's the biggest thing is he's seeing everything. You're right, he's seeing blitzes and top locks and boxing ones and denials and all that stuff. But the good news is as a team, we're making progress of figuring out how to play off of all that stuff, and then still how to keep him involved in that stuff too, you know, when they are making such an effort to do that. 44 minutes the other night's pretty high, right? It was a hell of a game. It felt like a kind of a playoff style intensity defensive effort. Both teams were really physical going at it, and probably a little high for this time of the year, but we were pretty limited on bodies the other night.
Well, it was obviously a lot of discussion when Kyle, you know, moved on, the you know, his absence and him not being around, and how you fill those minutes and presence in the room. And everyone was looking towards Van Vliet and thinking this is a natural succession, right? Like, he plays the same position and he appears to have the same type of mentality. How much of a comparison do you see in the two guys?
Yeah, very similar, right? Very similar. The biggest thing for both of them is they compete to win. They play both ends, really, really know the game, and then can deliver, right? Can deliver a lot in production on the floor, make a lot of winning plays. They're very similar, yeah.
Well, you guys will get a taste of going up against Lowry on Monday. You're down there in Miami. It's not as if you don't know the guy, but what do you expect this experience to be like, watching Kyle Lowry in a different uniform and coaching against him?
Well, I got a couple other games to get to before that one.
Right.
But I have seen Miami here a little bit, and right now they're in one of their they're really firing. They're super healthy. They're playing a bunch of people. They're playing extremely hard. They're really taking it to people. They're in one of their grooves, which they do. Like seems like about this time every year they get in one of these things where they just start wiping out everybody in their way. I'll look a little bit closer. I think it'll be interesting. Kyle will certainly have a lot of info, I think, to give them on our guys. I'm sure he'll be involved heavily in the game plan, but always look forward to playing down there. It seems our team, it's one of the places our team seems to rise up and really play, no matter who we got or who they got or whatever. So looking forward to it.
Well, as much as people are enjoying watching your team this year, Nick, we Raptor fans always love looking back on your championship year in 2019. And interesting anecdote from Phil Handy, who was on a podcast recently, and he talked about being down 0-2 to the Bucks. And, you know, there was talk of what adjustments you guys could make. And the way Phil told it, he said Kawhi essentially said, you know, I am the adjustment. The adjustment is I'm going to guard Giannis. How do you remember that moment?
Yeah, we did talk about moving Kawhi over to him more regularly. Obviously, we had him on him. We didn't have him on the whole game. We were trying to, you know, manage the game and get him to certain points and things like that. And then obviously we got down 0-2. And yeah, I kind of remember walking over to Kawhi on the practice floor after the first practice back on that and saying, you got to go on Kawhi now. And he goes, I know. And I said, okay. And that was about it. So there we go.
That'll work. So who on your team do you think could pull that off now, playing Giannis on Saturday night and just said, I want him, I'm taking him?
Well, we've got – yeah, we're okay there, to be honest. I mean, listen, it's a hard one, and you usually need numbers. And even Kawhi saying he's taking, it wasn't like he was on him every second. There's still lots of actions where you're switching, and that was a lot of, you know, you're putting Middleton in, they do a lot of actions with Middleton, and you have to guard him with both, and you could somehow, if he's big enough, you know, Pascal and Kawhi could end up switching off. Even Serge could get involved in that. You know, so now we're with OG, Scotty, Pascal, Precious, probably are the four guys that we will throw at Giannis.
Well, as you said, you got to get through Detroit before you get to Milwaukee, and I
right.
We don't want to look past that, obviously. And
we sure don't.
We'll see if Scotty can play tomorrow night, Gary Trent Jr. But I was reading quotes from and listening to Pascal Siakam this morning, and we're well aware of, you know, on the outside looking in anyway, of some of the trials and tribulations he's been through the last couple of years. In the bubble last year, he had some issues, major surgery. But I would say he's playing as well as he's played maybe at any point in his career, the last 7 or 8 games. And even beyond that, maybe the last 5, 6 weeks, he's dialed in.
Yep.
He looks good. Is this the guy you saw before the bubble, or is this an improved version? Like, he's growing, I'm assuming, and evolving as a player. What do you think is clicking so well for Pascal Siakam?
Yeah, I think, you know, the short answer would be he's finally, I think, in a good place physically, which I think is lending really closely to be just in a good place mentally. I think his confidence has just risen. And for me, it's like, I love it that he's scoring and he's grabbing rebounds. I love the rebounding, you know, the numbers. That's like the biggest one that stands out to me. He's just involved in the action and in the fight. I think his rebounding, his passing, he's really playing it at a better rhythm. You know, just far fewer shots in like tremendous traffic. He's drawing traffic and getting it out and making plays and what else? I just think his overall movement. You know, he's in early, staying late. He's working with the younger guys. He's really become a good leader. And then kind of now this extra is he's actually, you know, we're actually playing him at the point guard. So this is kind of another layer, you know, to his game.
So, Nick, we talked about Dennis Rodman being an influence on some of your players. Of course, the Hall of Famer, one of the great rebounders in the history of the game. Yeah, I wanted to get a sense of your recollections of coaching him. Of course, it was a bit of a vanity appearance back in the British League 15 years ago. Dennis Rodman, 44 years old at the time, comes to play for your Brighton Bears. And what's your best Dennis Rodman story?
It was three games, right? He played three games for us. He was, I don't know if you guys know, he was on Celebrity Big Brother in the UK. Remember when Big Brother was kind of reality TV? It was humongous. Like, seriously, 40 million people were watching it, and he was like a household name in England. So the team got this idea to, you know, see if he'd come play when he got voted off the house. And they said yes, and he came down. It was a really big deal. You know, we normally issue in a British basketball game about three press credentials, and I think we had 190 that night from all over Europe, and people were coming in. And I don't know what's the best story. The best story is he came in. The game was delayed because he was delayed coming down from London, and all our guys were in the locker room. I think the game was supposed to start at 7:30, and you know he wasn't there. And they were like, "Oh, he's almost here. We're going to move the game to 8:00." So they push it back to 8:00. All the guys are sitting in the locker room. He comes in about 7:45, and he looks at everybody and says, "Hey, how's it going?" He goes, "I always shower before the game." So he went straight into the shower. So it's like, you know, we think then the ball's going up here in a little bit. He comes out, he sits down, and he says, "Hey, I don't want to start. Coach, start your regular guys. I'll come in off the bench." And so it was kind of cool. And he came in off the bench, and you guys know this. And my team was Phil Jackson, you know, like every young coach back then was running the triangle. And he came in and did one of his, you know, flash-in backdoor passes like the first play, and then at the other end he took a charge right off the bat, and the place was going crazy. So pretty cool.
That is cool. Yeah. I love the – like, you got to have some power. You must be a superstar with Big Brother and reality TV to push the game back because you just didn't show up on time.
Well, it's British basketball. things happen over there where you got to move time slots, and we aren't going live on TV or anything. So there was a lot of games moved around. You get stuck in traffic. You do this and that. I probably had 10 or 12 in my career where the game got pushed back from its regular starting time.
Well, it all worked out for you. It all worked out. Yep. I don't think that'll be the case tomorrow night. They're not going to adjust the game. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Always we'll appreciate you finding time for us, Nick. Enjoy it down there, and we'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
Okay, guys. Take care.
There's Nick Nurse, head coach of the Raptors. That's a cool story. Shows up, has to shower before the game.
Amazing.
And I'm not starting. Loved the power just to say that one time. I'm not playing until I tell you when.
Right.
And actually a coach saying, okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, Nick basically laid it out that the league was probably like, we're doing this, and he's playing, and he's going to show up, and you're going to have to like it. If you win or lose, it doesn't matter. Rodman's going in the game when he wants to go in the game.
Wow. They paid him something like $75,000 for three games in a league where most of the guys were playing for a few pints, really. I
mean. Right, fish and chips or something, and Rodman's out there making cash. I didn't know that he was a part of the Celebrity Big Brother in the UK. I don't remember him doing it in the States.
What did he last? One show? It must have been one show.
He would have been a handful, though, man. He would have been fun. Like, that's what the producers would be looking for. It's just a gong show, right? Like, that's what they are hoping to bring to the table. So anyway, thanks to Nick Nurse. The Raptors in action tomorrow in Detroit, in Milwaukee on Saturday, down in Miami taking on Kyle Lowry and the Heat on Monday. So we appreciate him finding time for us. The Leafs are back in action on Saturday in St. Louis. We'll get to that. Wild card weekend, super wild card weekend coming up. We're going to have picks tomorrow. We're tracking the Sony Open. There's a lot going on. Dave Festchuk of the Star in here with the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Luke Wilson, our TSN NFL analyst, will join us in just over half an hour. Darren Dreger, our hockey insider, in about an hour. I guess we'll ask Dregs about the story I read this morning, or earlier this afternoon, that I guess the NHL had to let the province of Quebec down lightly today because the premier in Quebec has been adamant. Got to get a team back to Quebec City. They built that building, and no one's there. Like, I think the junior team plays there, and they must have concerts stuff. But
apparently gorgeous rink, too.
I think it was when it was built. Who knows if it's going to be the next time it's relevant. You know, it feels like Cops Coliseum 2.0. Like, that kind of feels like where it's going. But the NHL, as they should, you know, you got to show respect to political leaders in the province, and the Habs are there, and Quebec City's got a rich history with the NHL. They did the Zoom call, I guess, like heard the pitch about why maybe the NHL should be thinking of returning. And based on what I read today, the NHL basically said, thanks for coming out, but just not any appetite for that. So thank you.
Yeah.
See you later.
Maybe worry about getting fans in the other building in Quebec.
It's a good point, though, about the timing. Like, these kind of things with bureaucrats and even the league, they probably sent an email 4 months ago and then a follow-up 3 months ago and then 2 months ago. Then finally it was like, all right, we'll pick a date and we'll just go with it. But if you're Bettman and company, you're probably thinking, you are personally costing me a fortune. You. Like, you personally made the decision not to allow anyone into the Bell Center. So why would I have any, you know, positive outlook on this conversation with you right
now?
You know, it is
tough. Why do I even want to field this call?
Like, No, they got to be furious. Like, they have to understand it's the real world, and it is what it is. And the reasoning behind it, it's not callous or mean-spirited or anything. I mean, the provinces are doing what they believe they have to do for the healthcare system and the betterment of the province and the people that live in Ontario, Quebec, et cetera. We all understand that, and I'm sure the league does too. But it's a business. Their priority is making money, and this is costing them money. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and that, like, I mean, if you're on the Zoom call in the Gary Bettman era from Quebec City, you have to know what the answer is, do you not? Like, you know what the answer is before you start the call. Like, Gary Bettman's not expanding, or he's not moving a franchise north of the border. He's not, especially after he's already done that with one in the form of the Winnipeg Jets. So it wasn't going to happen. It's not going to happen. And I can't see it happening for quite some time, if ever.
No, unless they expand to 40 teams, you know, 36 teams, 40 teams, which may happen at some point. You never say never. And there's only so many American cities. Like, that, the crowd in Arizona last night was pathetic. Like, that's a pathetic crowd. I get it. The team's horrendous, and they have been forever. And if you're a fan down there, why would you trust them?
Austin Matthews back in town.
But that's it. We kept hearing, we had Tyson Nash on yesterday, and Nash was like, oh, when the homecoming's here, man, there's a buzz. It didn't seem like there was much of a buzz. No one cared that Austin was in town. He had family and friends there. There were more Leaf fans. It felt like there were more Leaf fans than there were Coyote fans.
Well, it's the old story, right? Like, it's a badly situated arena. And then once the club says that we can't play in this arena anymore, the commissioner of the league has said we can't play in this arena anymore, how do you expect people to make that drive to that arena that you've already said is not fit for hockey? It's not going to work. I mean, it's like people just move on, right? People move on. They got better things to do with their money, and they're not going to spend it on you until you bring, you know, that team. If they're going to move to another arena, maybe you can revitalize that town. I think it's a good sports town, but they're not going to be able to do it in Glendale.
No, and on top of it, you've admitted you're awful and you want to be awful. So how do you possibly sell that? Our rink is in the middle of nowhere. It sucks. We're not going to be here that long. And we want to be the worst team you've ever seen before. Come on out. You know, bring the kids.
Exactly.
Bring the family. It's an awful sales pitch. So I'm not surprised. But that's where Winnipeg went, was that market, right? And they're trying to hold on for dear life. Now, it's worked in Colorado in terms of Quebec City for the most part. I wouldn't say that Denver is – it's not a top 10 market, I don't think, in the States. But they support the Avalanche. It's a good one, yeah. And there's no danger of them going anywhere or leaving. But you got Houston. I don't know, maybe Kansas City. That Kansas City's the Quebec City of the U.S.
They've been talking about that one an awfully long time.
It's all for 30 years. Like, maybe they go to Kansas City. I'm not sure I see that happening. So you're talking Houston, and then where else? Like, if you're going to expand that much more, where else are you going? You've already gone to Vegas. You went to Seattle. Where else are you going to go?
No, you're right. It's getting to be slimmer pickings at that point. You're talking about places like maybe Portland or you know, I don't know. There's no easy answer, right? There's nothing really rolls off the tongue. So, so if you're right, if you go beyond, if you go into the, you know, 34-team, 35-team, 36-team type of format, maybe Quebec City gets a sniff, but that's a long way away.
It is, and it would cost you a lot. Like, I think if they were ever to come back here, it would be expansion. They're not relocating because you're going to lose out on that money. You know, they don't want to relocate teams unless it's an absolute nuclear option, because owners are willing to pay $600 million for a new team, $650 in Seattle. You go to Quebec City, they may say in 10 years, if you pay $1 billion, fine, you can have your team back. And I don't know if there'll be an appetite for that. I don't know if there'll be an owner that's willing to pay it. But it's too bad for people in Quebec City. But to your point, it's not a surprise at all, because Bettman, he's put a stake in the ground on multiple things. We were talking about this the other day. I think it was Chris Johnston who said, when we brought up the idea of a play-in tournament like the NBA has implemented now, that Bettman is the one that is staunchly against it in NHL circles. He will not go down that road. Doesn't want to do it because he thinks it will take away from the sanctity of the regular season. So Bettman's he's made up his mind. Like, I don't know if they'd ever really want to come to Toronto again. I don't know if it would ever work, but I believe there's one guy who will not even try, and it's Bettman. He will not put a second team in Toronto. He won't go back to Quebec City. He won't change up the playoff format. He won't leave Arizona. Like, there's certain things he's just determined because he's been the man for 30 years.
I think the Toronto thing, Hayes, is silly, man. Like, to just blatantly say no way, second team in Toronto, I think it would be mad. I think it would be huge. I think it would be awesome.
I think at worst it would be middle of the pack. At worst it would be the Colorado Avalanche. It would just be a good team that makes some money, and if they go on a playoff run, they make a fair amount of money. If they're awful for 5 years, they might lose a little bit of money. That's the NHL in a nutshell. And the franchise value would keep going up, and it would just increase year over year, and I think it could work for sure. But I don't think Bettman has any interest in trying that. And it's too bad. Like, with the playoff, the idea of expanded playoffs or changing up the playoffs, I have also been against it in the past. But the more and more I've thought about it, the more and more I've seen it in other leagues and just put into perspective the fact that you can manufacture thoroughly entertaining moments on your calendar, it makes a lot of sense to me. And Bettman, by all accounts, won't change his mind.
Yeah, you know, the one thing about that, though, that I do agree with is, like, why are you playing the 82, right? Like, what is the point of the 82 game regular season if you're just going to say it's essentially irrelevant and make it, you know, this single elimination tournament at the end of it? Because the thing, I think you'd feel differently if, let's say, the Leafs were the seventh seed and the 10th seed squeaks in. So it's 7-8 plays and 9-10 play, and the winner of 9-10 get to play the winner of 7-8 or the loser of 7-8, right? So whatever it is, if there's a massive spread there, like right now, if you did that in the East, you'd have Pittsburgh's got 47 points. The 10th seed has 33 points. So Pittsburgh's way better than Columbus. And then suddenly they're on like a single elimination situation where all that hard work they've done to build that gap is brought down to one game because Columbus got hot at the right time. I think that might irk you a little bit if your team's on the wrong end of that.
Yes, I think it would be early on in the process, but it's like anything else. Once it's baked into the cake long enough, you forget about that specific ingredient. You know, it's just that's the way it works. It's like the shootout. There were so many complaints for 4, 5, 6 years. Now it's just, I don't know, we've been doing it for 15 years. This is the way it works. And I get what you're saying in terms of watering down the regular season, and it would be, but go talk to baseball. They play double the games, and they do it. You know, and it can be even worse than baseball. Look at this year with the Dodgers. They played St. Louis, who were on a heater coming down the stretch, and legitimately deserved to be in the playoffs, no question. But they had 106 wins. They had to play a one-off game.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that was the best argument for reseeding it that we've ever seen.
Yes. Yeah, that was crazy. I mean, 106 wins and you've got to fight to survive one off in a game that's as random as baseball. But if those are the rules, then those are the rules. And let's face it, North America is not really a regular season sports continent. Like, we thrive in the playoffs. We build towards the playoffs.
Hazy, you're mentioning baseball. Like, are they going to get it together here? I love these reports now. It's like Darren Dreger, New York City lockout type updates. It's like, nah, there's nothing going on here. Status quo with Major League Baseball. It's like I just don't understand.
It's the same playbook as the NHL. It's playing out the same way, where the owners met with the Players Association, and they went first. They took the first step forward, I guess. And although the players, I'm sure, have made them know what they want or what they like and what they want changed. And they put forth an offer, and it was immediately turned down. And immediately it was leaked through the media that the owners are negotiating in bad faith. And this is the way it goes. And now the players will go back and go way over the top, and they'll barely move. And the owners will say, bad faith, this is a joke. It's just, it's the same thing every single time. We see it in the NHL every 7 or 8 years.
I don't know, man.
It'll come down to the wire.
The players have to just understand that the owners are the ones that are going to, they hold the trump cards here. And if you don't want to take a little bit of a kick in the pills, which to a normal person that's earning a living, that's just what's going to happen. And you're going to have to take a haircut somehow, and you're still going to have a great life, and you move on with it. Like, that's what's going to go down here. The owners are going to say, look, we can maybe give you this, but at the end of the day, there's going to be some way where it comes down to money, and the owners hold the power, and they're just going to say, this is it. Take it or leave it. You either make money, you have a great living, or you don't. You don't do nothing. So figure it out. They hold the power, man.
Yeah, because the real pressure comes, O-Dog, and you know how this is because you've lived it. The real pressure doesn't show up on the players until they start missing checks, right? And
that's
or at least
right.
There's the threat that they're going to start missing checks. So I just,
and
you know,
you'd
Jeff
be shocked,
Bassett was
saying, how many guys that you think that were making $5, $6, $10 million a year, they don't need to worry about a paycheck. And you hear horror stories of guys that are just sweating on their couch making phone calls for that paycheck. It's like, what the hell were you
taking
up
out
to?
Loans? Taking out loans.
Like, it's crazy stuff.
Back.
It's none of anybody's business, but you're like, really, man? Are you serious?
Yeah.
Crazy stuff.
Exactly. And so that's why a lot of people are saying there's not going to be real progress in this negotiation until we're closer to that deadline where the checks are threatened.
But well, I always wonder, for the betterment of the sport, why don't they just get into a meeting room and say, let's hammer this out? Because the optics look so bad.
It's the exact same thing with the NHL. Like, this is, I think this is a sign. We'll see how this plays out. It's too early to determine. But the NFL is in a different universe, where they're not, like, they've had work stoppages, they've had CBA battles, there have been issues that's been taken to the courts and all that. But for the most part, the last couple, both sides have been like, what are we doing here? We're talking $10 billion of revenue or whatever. We're making a fortune. These TV contracts are ludicrous. So they eventually just say, wink, wink, nod, nod, let's pretend like we both won and shake hands and move on. The NBA, for the most part, has done the same thing, because the NBA is moving in the same direction in terms of how lucrative the league is. Baseball's been in that group. In fact, baseball's been in between the NFL and the NBA for the most part in terms of franchise values, in terms of how much revenue they bring in. Part of that is because of the amount of games they play. You can sell it more to TV. But I wonder if this might be a testament that they're coming closer to the NHL than they are the NFL in terms of their dollars and cents and the way that they're going to operate here, because it feels like the same playbook that Bettman and company and Donald Fehr and company, ironically enough, Donald Fehr now working with the NHL instead of the MLBPA, is they're just going to take it down to the wire. It's going to be a stare down, and then both sides will capitulate a little bit. They know where it's going to end. Like, both sides know where it's going to end, like, for the most part. And they're just, they got too much ego at stake, and there's probably a couple of owners and a couple of players who are hotheads saying, screw these guys, screw that.
Yep.
And this is what happens. And it's the same thing that happened with the NHL every time they locked out.
I love that. I love that one. We're not accepting it. We're not doing a salary cap. And all the guys are like, yeah, screw them.
Yeah.
And then it's like you miss a year, a combined $1 billion of salary. And then the next year you're like, we're doing a salary cap.
You have to take it anyway because you lost.
Then you just look at it and you're like, what the hell were we even thinking? Like, I just see the guys right out. You saw the guys right after making so much money. You're like, what the hell were we not seeing here, where it's like we couldn't have had a good living and played in the NHL? And guys' careers ended. You look back on it and say, that's just stupid. That is so stupid.
The fact that you lost in the end, quote-unquote lost.
Or you just capitulated on the one big thing that you were making this stand for, saying we're never going to accept that, and then you ultimately do. It's like, what in the hell were we doing?
But you can speak to it. You were in the union at that point. It must have become clear at some point. You're like, these owners are not going to budge. Like, we may not play for 3 years. They're never going to change.
I'll never forget Shane Doan and Jerome Iginla stood up at one of these meetings, and they're kind of, you know, pressury type things where it's like, they were younger guys, and they're like, guys, maybe we got to listen to them here and just maybe talk out the idea of the salary cap. And older guys just stood up and said, shut up, it's never going to happen. And I was like, oh boy, like this, I just knew where this was going. It was, I imagine them standing up saying, maybe we just need to toss around this idea. And then it was just like, it's never happening. That's never going to happen in this game for us. And then it's like,
wow.
Oh, bro, that's
great. I got
news
for you, fellas. That salary cap's the reason one Jerry Bettman's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Because that won him eternal gratitude from all the hawkish NHL owners, the stingiest guys in the room who didn't want to pay you guys anything. Oh, they love him forever because of that.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yep. Why wouldn't they?
And kept the basement of the cap relatively low as well. Like, that was a part of the negotiation once you accepted the cap. It's like, all right, well, we got teams that don't want to pay anything close to the roof. So, you know, let's work on that basement and see how close we can get to that. And, but it's also a sign of what happens within the union, and I'm sure it's happening within baseball, where you got younger guys that, like, if you're Fernando Tatis Jr., you're probably like, just sign it, man, let's go. Like, I got my 300 sheets. What do I care? And I don't know anything different. Like, I just want to play. I want to get out there. So you get younger guys who are probably like, all right, well, this is the new world we live in, and I don't know about the owners. I don't want to butt heads with them. And then you'd get grizzled veterans who have been in baseball forever, and baseball has historically always been the strongest union, right? Like, they didn't get locked out in 94. They walked.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Don't kid yourself, Hayes. I think there were some guys making millions and millions that were leading the charge of saying, we need to get moving here because we want our dollars, so let's get cooking here.
True.
Salary cap, whatever. Let's get going.
Yeah.
They were leading the charge behind the scenes.
And eventually that, I'm sure, is what broke the camel's back, and it will probably happen here with the PA in baseball too. Is the older guys, the veterans, are going to have to say, this is what we got. This is all we can get. We're at the line. Sign it. Let's play. It's just a matter of whether or not they start camp on time. Like, I think pitchers and catchers report in a month tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see that getting pushed back. I still kind of think they'll work this out and be playing opening day or close to it, but pressure points. That's the way it generally works. Nick Nurse joined us earlier today. We'll get back into the Raptors, back in action tomorrow night in Detroit. Get back into the Leaf loss in Arizona, what Sheldon Keefe had to say postgame about his team. And Luke Wilson coming up, Darren Dreger coming up as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. So I was out doing some running around today, and I came across a seated elliptical option. And
the Ubi.
Yeah, I'm investigating. Like,
you're not, dude. How could anyone, Hayes, think that rolling your ankles like this can get any exercise, dude?
I don't even think
an old person, like 85, like, you can't get exercise.
This is what Josh Allen needs on the sideline on Saturday night.
No.
He needs one of these.
You're saying, like, the recumbent bicycle, this is the recumbent elliptical? How does this even work?
It's only the feet. Like, there's no arms, there's no apparatus, nothing.
No.
It's just, you're basically stepping. It's a lot of stepping.
You're rolling your ankles, Fest Chuck, underneath your desk. There it is. Like,
The QB. Yeah. I think it's a possible game changer, man. I work that into the rotation from 4 to 7 every day. That would count for something. I don't know what kind of calories you'd be shaking off. But
so you do it while you're on the show.
I think
QBing under the desk.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
QB, send us one. We'll try it.
It's worth a shot. You know, we're hooking you up. A little free advertisement there. I posted something about it on Twitter, and I got some response where people said, I've fired up a QB, and it seems to do something.
No, you didn't get one tweet that says, I've used the QB, and I'm noticing a difference in my life. You did not get that tweet.
Not directly. But I could sense it in the response.
Like, what's your level of fitness, Hayes? Like, if you're QBing right now, are you breaking into a sweat? Are
I think
you breathing heavily?
I think it would be, Dave. It's pathetic. I'm so out of shape. It's actually pathetic. Like, the amount of times I've had the conversation just with myself saying, I've been doing this for 2 years. We're at home during COVID. Like, why not just jump on the elliptical? Why not do some push-ups, some sit-ups?
Especially when you worked at 4 p.m. That's the kicker,
there's
man.
No excuse for it.
None.
Like, none. Absolutely none. The kids are going back to school. I'm going to be in the house. You know, why not? Just do a little bit of workout. Do 20 minutes a day, a half an hour. I haven't done anything. We made this, my wife and I, with our kids, put this big board together because we were committed to doing like 10,000 steps a day. We're going to do all these push-ups and sit-ups and squats and lunges. This whole like arts and crafts thing just to give us something to do. I think we did it for like 2 days. And this would have been last April, you know, early in the pandemic, or 2020, back in 2020. We're like, all right, if we're going to be doing this, we can't go anywhere, and we're at home, let's fire this bad boy up. It just never happened. And now it's resorted to me looking into the QB as possibly the only thing that can get the heart rate going, because it's pathetic. It's absolutely pathetic.
Look at this guy.
Out of shape.
Look at this
guy.
Oh, yes!
Outstanding. That's outstanding. Whisper quiet, too. So I could do it during the show.
Glutes, hammies, and biceps that also – what?
Yeah, quads.
There's no way.
It's
look at this big grinder right here. I can watch that guy on that TV all day
He's
long.
He's the best with the khakis and the tight tuck. What's he watching? Well, look at her. There she is.
What is he watching?
I need the QB, and I need to know what that cat's watching because he is engaged. Maybe he's watching Overdrive.
There's –
could be watching us right
now. Yeah,
anything's possible. All right, final hour coming up. Luke Wilson, what did he do to fight the cold weather? Did he ever resort to pills, popping pills? We'll tell you about that. We'll get into it with Luke. Darren Dreger, Hockey Insider as well. Final hour up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.